You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
They're back together again.
Hello there, welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, the internet's only movie podcast. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder. Over there is Smilin' Jeff Bear.
Hello, everybody. I'm Smilin' Jeff Bear. That is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder. Did you think it was real for a second when I did that before we started?
That you were about to throw up? No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
I think I have a pretty good fake, but I bet everybody does.
Well, yeah.
Everybody likes their fake throw-up face.
Probably anyone who has thrown up remembers the experience well enough to pretend. Also, you can't fool me. I have a cat that throws up all the time because it's a cat. So I know what a throw-up face looks like. Cats, they're just like people. You know how sometimes you'll eat a bunch of food too fast and then make yourself throw up because you ate it too fast? Yeah. Just like people.
You know, we have a special dish for our dog that is like it's hard for Austin to get the food out.
He
has to dig for it a little bit.
That's
to slow him down because he just every meal gone in 20 seconds.
Dog cat doesn't do that all the time. Maybe once a month or so, he'll just get too excited. As do we all. I mean, hey, it's cat food. Same cat food as yesterday. Who wouldn't be excited to wolf it down? Welcome to this show, which is about movies.
We swear.
Mm-hmm. We begin every show with an iTunes review. Tell them about it, Jeff.
See, what happens is you write us an iTunes review. You make it perhaps funny or sincere or just fine. I think we would take fine.
Really? I was going to say as long as it's in English, but even that is not a criteria.
True. And what we'll do, we'll turn it into pure magic. Eric D. Snyder will read it in an old-time radio voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Here we go. This was a review written by Baron von Quacklepants. Ooh, the Baron. Oh.
It's about time we had more Barons watching that are listening. That's hard to watch.
The title of this iTunes review is, Have You Heard of Moving Pictures? Then this podcast is for you. And Baron von Quacklepants writes, Two top shelf fellas sling the straight poop on all the latest greatest talkies. It's can't miss infotainment. 12 stars. Thank you, Baron von Quacklepants, for that sincere and well-measured review. So that's all you got to do. Write a little review on iTunes. We'll read it on the show. It's as easy as pie.
Pie.
Not as easy as making pie, because making pie is hard.
It is.
Easy as eating pie.
That should be the phrase.
It's as easy as eating a pie.
As long as you got a fork.
Who needs a fork for pie? Just take a fistful of pie and shove it in your face.
Can we talk about movies?
All right. No. First, we have more housekeeping to do first.
All right.
Business to take care of.
That's right.
Item number one. Several weeks ago, we put out the call for some new theme songs. Because the ones that we have, we love them, but they're all too long. They're from back in the days when we were on an internet radio station, and it seemed like we should have like a minute-long theme song, because that's what shows did.
Right. Podcast, you need like 20, 25 seconds, 30 tops.
People just want to get right to the meat of it.
That's right.
So, but so far, no one has submitted one. We've had a few people say they were going to, but no one has submitted one yet. And I know you're doing this for free on your own time. We can't hassle you about this. I'm just saying, before...
Oh, that's a hassle. No, you just turned it.
I'm just saying. Before, like so 6 or 7 of you recorded theme songs and sent them to us, and they were great, and we rotated through them. So I'm just, you know, please. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be like a good singer, a good musician. You've heard the garbage we've got at the top of the show.
It can be a voiceover, a cool voiceover, like movie trailer stuff, whatever you want. I don't care.
Yeah.
Just have fun with it.
We'll play it at least once. It would have to be just obscene for us not to even play it one time.
Oh, I can't imagine a scenario where somebody would take the time and effort and then just make it terribly profane as well.
That would be very funny. I think you and I would get a kick out of that, but yeah, we couldn't use it on the show. But please submit something.
I just wouldn't be able to get past why somebody took so much time. Like, time's kind of precious.
Just to be perverse.
Weird. People. Am I right?
Then also, people are the worst. It's true. Then also, we recently launched a Patreon campaign.
That's right.
That allows you, the listener, to be a patron of the show.
And what that means is you listen to the show, and you sign up for this, and we get a dollar an episode From you.
From you, yes. Yeah. We probably shouldn't say it in the passive voice. You pay $1 an episode. To be clear.
You pay, we get.
But it's not, obviously it's not subscription. Everybody can still listen to the show, but we're and so far several, a few dozen patrons have stepped up and are putting $1 in the tip jar for every show, and we appreciate it. And
very much so.
Feel free if you have not done that and get some value out of the show and would like to throw $1 our way every week, then by all means.
You know, Eric, we should tell them like what we purchased. We upgraded.
Yeah. We did. We upgraded our microphones a bit, got some new
foam Nerf balls
windscreens over them. I'll be doing that. And, you know, hopefully, I don't know if people have noticed. I've been doing more editing on the show lately. I don't know. To me, it feels like it must be obvious that there's less and less of us interrupting each other than there used to be, because I've been fixing that in post.
But only like 15 minutes a show.
Yeah, that's why the show's been shorter, because I've been cutting out all the garbage that used to be part of the show. So, you know, hopefully the show is getting better. It was already great, of course, but hopefully it's getting even better.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Patreon. Go to moviebs.com. You'll see the red button there for Patreon. Now we can talk about movies.
Shall we talk about Blair Witch?
Yes, let's. The real Blair Witch was love. But also a witch. This, of course, is a sequel to The Blair Witch Project from 1999.
That's right.
We've talked about this before. You were a fan, right, of the original Blair Witch Project?
I was a fan. I was not an enormous fan.
All right.
I was a fan. I think, well, I saw it at home first before it was released and all that kind of stuff. It would have been interesting. Yeah. I knew somebody and he was passing around a tape. So I just, you don't know this story?
What? No.
I actually watched like what looks like a slightly beaten up VHS with masking tape on it that said Blair Witch on the side.
Really?
Yeah. And he was like, hey, watch this.
Like some pirated screener or something?
Yeah, 98.
Wow.
No, not pirated 99. Screener. I think it was, for me, it was 98 when I saw it.
It was even before it premiered at Sundance then?
Ooh.
Because it premiered at Sundance in January of 99.
This is this thing. Didn't this actually wasn't this being passed around in LA and I was a part of this? I did not make up this.
I mean, I believe you. It's possible. Yeah, that's right. You were living in LA then.
Yeah.
It's possible, I guess.
I swear this happened. I mean, it was my girlfriend at the time. I can check this story out if it has holes.
Well, I don't think
I've created this moment.
That's extra interesting. If you saw it potentially even before it premiered at Sundance, that's very interesting.
I saw it before I knew anything about it at all.
Yes, I love Blair Witch Project. And I was, unfortunately, I saw it, what I was getting at is I saw it not at Sundance, but early enough to where there was not the backlash yet.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was that terrible sequel. Book of Shadows.
Oh, yeah. I never saw it.
It's very bad. Very bad. I even watched it again a few years ago to see if it was still as bad. And it was. Not as bad, but still very bad.
Was it still like a POV found footage?
Yeah, but really bad and stupid.
Okay.
There are people who say that it's a good movie, but don't listen to those people.
Because
those people
right,
are
sir.
Wrong. And so now here's this, another sequel. And it's the same kind of scenario with the cameras, except it's the brother of the girl, Heather. Who mm-hmm. disappeared in the first one. He was a little kid when that happened. And now, you know, 15 years later, he wants to go and investigate.
Yeah, he's been a little bit obsessed. And
You know how it is when your sister disappears under supernatural circumstances. Like, you tend to fixate on that for a while.
And luckily, a girl in his class is doing a documentary project on him. And therefore, we have cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
And they make it a little bit convenient. At least it'll seem that way for a while.
Technology has been upgraded.
Yeah, technology upgraded. We got GPS on everything, which that'll be good for horror movie stuff later.
Right.
We have the ear camera, which, maybe that'll make something more intense.
This is great because these earpiece cameras, you wear it on your ear like an earpiece, but it's a camera. And so the effect is that it's like you're holding a camera, except you don't have to hold a camera, which solves the problem of, in all of these movies, why are you still filming this? Why are you still holding the camera? Well, now it's because it's on your ear like an eyeglasses.
Right. They're not going to like get scared and then take off their camera.
Although, there was still a moment. They still managed to find a way. Where maybe it was the same moment for you, but where someone had been very sick and ill and like out of it. But she still thought to put the earpiece camera on her ear when she came out of the tent.
Oh.
Thanks for doing that. Like barely conscious.
One thing I like about this young brother He's an EMT. He knows his stuff. He'll be able to figure out a crisis. I like that idea about him.
Sure. His name's James, by the way.
James
and Lisa. And they go with another couple, Ashley and Peter. And then they what has happened, the inciting incident, is that a new tape supposedly has been found in these woods that makes James think that there's new evidence about what happened to Heather. So they go to talk to these dingbats who found the tape, Lane and Talia.
Right.
And they wound up tagging along, forcing themselves to be brought along into the woods, which I like the dynamic of having these two couples that are friends and this outsider couple who are the X factor. We don't know what their motives are or if we can trust them or what they're doing. And so they're a good foil. It's good to have that dynamic of some variety in the types of attitudes and the motivations that people in the group have.
It's a very good idea. I thought it was a very poor application. Like it's almost like they forgot about this couple on occasion and didn't know exactly what to do with their addition.
Well, but I really like what they did, where they go away for a while and come back, and like I like that. I thought that was effective.
There was one thing that I wrote down that was like, whoa, this couple, something happens to them in the movie that opens up the possibility of a lot more in this world that we've known up until then, I think.
It does add to the mythology a little bit of what this is all about.
And there's that one moment where I'm like, oh, okay, let's go somewhere. But the movie doesn't, I don't think.
No, it doesn't very much.
The main problem in the beginning is, besides nothing really happening, it's either here's random camera knowledge, which you assume is going to come into play later and doesn't necessarily. It's just kind of filler conversation.
Right.
Or it's very specific exposition that they've just, you know, captured and they're showing. And
see, the usefulness of this third couple is that they get to – they're locals, so they know all the history of these woods. So they're filling in all the backstory and all the stuff that happened with the Blair Witch back in the day and all that. And some of that was fine. But, yeah, there's not a lot happening.
And then it's almost strictly just jump scares.
And then jump scares, too many jump scares. And
way too many jump scares.
I am disappointed in that. But then I would say about when we get to the last half hour, it's a 90-minute movie, we get to the last third, kind of where all hell's going to break loose. I like that. I think that most of that was pretty scary and good and well done and effective. Because it kind of becomes like a kind of a spook house kind of thing. And I thought that was well done, but and I wasn't bored with the hour before that, but I was also not often very scared or in suspense or tense, other than those stupid jump scares, which are annoying. And a few moments here and there that kind of got me with creepiness, but not enough.
There's a couple of jump scares that are kind of fun. Yeah. I was really surprised with... There's one kind of big moment to start the third act where I won't get into specifics. It has slightly to do with the tent.
Yeah.
From that moment on, I was done.
Oh, really?
And it was weird. It was because for most of it, I started realizing they're not moving the cameras to give me a hint of something. They're moving the cameras to remove any possibility of me fully understanding what I'm seeing in this world.
Too many moments where things, first of all, there's not a lot happening, and then when something does happen, and we can't really see what it is that has happened. At least twice where I actually didn't know what it was that was supposed to have happened.
It was removing my scare to try to actually focus and see, oh, okay, you might be showing me something cool finally here.
Let us see it, yeah.
And it was a tempted mood, and that was really disappointing that it just went there instead of something better. I just kept feeling flat about it after it was just like, oh, you've only offered jump scares, I'm kind of bored, and now I'm not feeling tense anymore because I'm just trying to figure out and see every little detail I can.
I was bothered by not being able to see the important stuff when it happened. But I did like the last third. And like I said, I wasn't bored with it. I liked it overall. I liked it overall, but I didn't love it.
I liked a tight spot somebody found themselves in. That creeped me out good.
That's creepy, yeah.
Otherwise, eh.
Yeah, I give it a B-.
I give it a 5.
All right. There you go. Sorry, Blair Witch. And then we have a couple of movies that I saw that you didn't.
Woohoo!
So you're excused. You can just put your head down on your desk and take a nap.
Mm.
Or just do some quiet work.
Nice.
And I'll review these movies. First up, it's Bridget Jones's Baby. And spoiler alert, she has a baby.
What? Come on.
She just wakes up one day, there it is, doesn't know where it came from.
You got to tell me to stop listening if you're going to do the whole thing where you just spoil the whole movie.
Not really. She does. She gets pregnant, though. That's what it's all about. She gets pregnant. And it's I don't know how much time has passed since the last one. I don't remember what happened in the second one, Edge of Reason.
I do remember that it was a significant drop off as far as entertainment goes.
Yes, I remember that too. The second one, I think, just copied the first one. And I don't remember how it ended. I guess they didn't end with them all dead.
Well, they might have ended with, did Hugh Grant die? Because he's not around this time.
He's not in the new one, no. And
is he ever mentioned?
Yes. It begins on Bridget's 43rd birthday, which is also the day of a memorial service being held for Hugh Grant, who has a character name in the movie.
Wait, seriously, they kill him?
Yeah.
Is he visible?
There's a picture of Hugh Grant there at the memorial.
That's it.
Yeah.
So your big question, your curiosity, of course, is do they have to pay Hugh Grant for that picture?
Yeah. I bet if it was just a still from one of the previous movies, I bet they wouldn't, because they've already paid for that. Because there is also brief footage from the previous
movies.
Hang
on. So, like, previously on Bridget Jones, they did it?
No, just like memories, like, you know, little montage memories of, oh, remember that time. But Darcy is there at the memorial also. Darcy is married now, and Bridget hasn't seen him in a while.
Hang on.
Huh.
Darcy's not married to her?
No, he's married to some other lady.
I don't remember the sequel.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Well, I don't like this one bit.
Well.
I thought they were together. I don't know if I even want this anymore.
Well, good news. Here's a movie. Remember how the first movie was kind of about, like, who she'd wind up with? This time, she might wind up with Darcy, but also she might wind up with a new guy, American guy, Jack Quant. Who's a billionaire? Played
Quant's
by.
Not a name.
It's not, and it's not spelled the way they have it on IMDb. There's not a W in it. But he's a billionaire, and she meets him at a music festival, and they hook up. And then a week later, she runs into Mr. Darcy. He's newly split up with his wife, and they hook up.
Oh boy!
And
oh
then
boy.
She gets pregnant.
Oh
and
boy!
Then, uh-oh, who's the dad? So it's one of those movies. And, Jack Quant, by the way, I thought he was played by one of the Dermots, but then I remember, no, it's Patrick Dempsey.
Actually visibly know what Patrick Dempsey looks like?
It took me a minute. First, I thought it was one of the Dermots, but then it sunk in. No, it's Patrick Dempsey.
All right, so here's the most interesting thing as of now. Unfortunately, it's not anything that you've said.
All right.
It's something I found on IMDb.
Okay.
Emma Thompson, in the movie.
Uh-huh.
An accredited screenwriter on the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one was not based on a book. It's credited to Emma Thompson and two other people. Oh, and Helen Fielding, the author of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then some dude. Emma Thompson plays her gynecologist. I wish Emma Thompson were my gynecologist.
I wish that as well.
She's great. I love Emma Thompson and everything.
Oh, I was actually just thinking about clearing out that problem you had.
Mm.
But you're right. She's great.
I love her in everything is a great recommendation for a gynecologist.
Up in everything.
Because for a while, here's the thing with this movie, and this feels like this is more so than the previous two, but it's been a while since I saw them, so it's hard to be sure. Bridget is sort of this klutzy, mm-hmm. unlucky,
mm-hmm.
keeps, like, there's a bit where she's a news producer, and she's feeding her anchor person. Interview questions over the headset, but then she takes a phone call and doesn't realize that what she's saying to the phone is going over
Come
the headset,
on.
And so the woman's repeating her questions, which are yeah,
no,
dumb,
that's
dumb
not
stuff
good
like
enough.
That, and it's got several of those dumb plot stuff where they're trying to get to the hospital, but one road is blocked, so they get out of the car and he carries her on foot instead to the hospital.
Could they have gone around the
yes,
barricade?
That's the, yeah, just dumb stuff like that. Dumb stuff. And kind of sitcom-y, buffoonish.
Does it end with, like, her delivering the baby?
It doesn't end with that. There's still more after that.
But is it, like, is that the third act? Her crazy delivery that, like, oh, no, how do I get there?
No, it's not a whole act.
Okay, good.
Your big segments are, it's 38 minutes that she finds out she's pregnant. 38 minutes in, she finds out she's pregnant. Then there's about 32 more minutes before she tells the truth to both men that she doesn't know which of them is the father.
No,
so for a while, there's a whole thing where they're, where she's trying to hide it from him.
That is the laziest thing that movies can do.
I know, because you're going to have to tell them eventually.
Yes, and time is so precious, and we know it's going to be told.
Or if you got one idea for one funny scene, there is she convinces her doctor to do two ultrasounds, one with each father, and pretend that they're each the only one. And that's funny. That's funny to see Emma Thompson.
No, that's not funny. That's very unethical, and I don't care for that kind of behavior one bit.
It's in England. They have different laws.
Oh, okay. That's cool then.
And then once they both know, then they're both trying to out-dad each other, outdo, you know, I can be a better supportive potential partner.
Hang on. Does that mean they both buy excessive things for the baby?
Not that exactly.
Okay, good, good.
But here's the thing. I bet you're wondering, well, why don't they just check and see who the father is? They can do it with the amniocentesis.
That is what I'm wondering.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very simple. They can do that fairly early in the pregnancy, I gather.
That's right.
Jab the needle in there, get the amniotic fluid, and then swish it around in your mouth and spit it out, and then you can tell who the father was.
Yeah, if it's one thing. If it's yeah. Blood, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like the acids.
Yeah, Dr. Emma Thompson is going to do it, but Bridget Jones sees the size of the needle and says, no way, I'm not going to let you do it.
No,
so instead, we have to wait till the baby is born to find out who the father is. That's the whole reason. Quickly, there's a line about there is a risk of hurting the baby. There's some, you know, as with any medical procedure, a minor risk. So very quickly, she gives that as the reason. No, it's too dangerous, but especially right. She doesn't like the needle.
Here's the thing. My wife, the doctor.
Right.
Has enjoyed Bridget Jones' Diary in the past.
I thought you were going to say she has enjoyed sticking needles into women's bellies.
It sounds like, based on this last scene... because like she had problems with Grey's Anatomy on occasion and stuff like that. This is it. This would kill her. Because like if there's anything that she hates more, it's misinformation on risks. She hates that to death. When somebody like hears a risk and is like, well, I don't want to do this because I've heard this is bad.
Right.
And then she has to spend her, you know, potential like half hour convincing that actually, here's all the science behind it. Mm-hmm. Please be at ease because we know what we're doing. That's the worst. I hate this movie.
Oh, wow. All right.
It's my first two.
Since your wife might not like it, you hate it. Wow.
Well, no, here was the thing. I just told her when I said, like, well, Eric saw the movie and I didn't. I was like, hey, maybe... it'd be fun for you to take a friend to this movie over the weekend and then tell me what you think of it. You'll see a movie before I will.
To be fair, they don't like emphasize this risk. They don't make a big deal out of it. It just she says in passing.
And I know.
It is an invasive test, sticking the needle in there.
Hey, hey, hey. You don't know the science behind it, and neither do I, so let's not speak upon it.
wait, no, I thought you did know the science behind it because you knew that it was wrong to say that it has a risk.
No, that was a generalization at best. I really – here's the thing. When she speaks of the job that she has,
yeah,
I think I retain about like 8 or 9% tops.
That sounds high.
Moving on.
But, you know, it's got some – funny stuff. I have always liked Renee Zellweger in this role, and she looks great. She mentions at the beginning, you know, she does her diary thing, and she is finally at her goal weight. That was always the thing in the other movies. She's always trying to lose weight. Now she is finally at her goal weight. She looks great. She looks different. Renee Zellweger does, but she looks good.
Yeah, this mattered in the news cycle for a little bit, right?
Well,
the fact
she may or may not
have had plastic surgery.
Well,
but
no.
Cares,
no,
what?
It's because she definitely did obviously looked different and people noticed. Yeah, there's probably polite ways to notice and impolite ways to notice. She also hadn't been in the public eye in a while, so we hadn't seen her in a while. So we saw her and was like, oh, you look different now. But she looks great. And I love her in this role.
Is the only reason we haven't seen her for a while because of maybe like her getting comfortable with a surgery? Or was
I don't think it's like that.
Okay, because it feels like it has been a long time. So it was just like she stepped away for a while, or she didn't like her opportunities for a while, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, last movie was 2010. Huh. No, I assume she'll show up on talk shows to talk about this, and then she'll probably say where she's been. Or she won't, and we'll know it's because she's ashamed of where she went. She was in rehab for 6 years. It took 6 years to get off her addiction to glue sniffing.
I was going to go with candy, but fine.
No, sniffing glue is what she used to do. And she picked a bad week to stop. Oh, I give it a B-. And then another one that I saw that you didn't, The Hollers.
I didn't see it, but based on this cast, I kind of wish I did.
Well, it's certainly a fine cast, and also Charlton Copley. But John Krasinski, Richard Jenkins, Margo Martindale, Anna Kendrick.
Charlie Day.
Charlie Day is in there, yeah.
Josh Groban.
Oh, yeah, he's in there a little bit. John Krasinski, that's the tall one from The Office.
I'm a big fan.
I know you are, but what am I? Also a big fan. He directed this, and this premiered at Sundance, and I missed it there, sort of on purpose, because the description was like, a guy returns to his small hometown to take care of his ailing mom, and wow, looks like things sure are different from when he lived there. In other words, it's the plot of, I would say, conservatively, 93% of all Sundance movies.
Yeah, it's Sundance the movie.
Guy going back to his hometown, and some of his old loser buddies are still there, and you know the drill.
Yep.
But now that I've seen it, I see that it is exactly that. Yeah, it's that. The mom is Margo Martindale, who is terrific. Love her. It's John Krasinski. He's in New York. He works for a publishing company. Wants to be an illustrator. Goes home. His mom's got a tumor. Dad is Richard Jenkins. His brother is Charlton Copley.
Interesting choice.
Yeah.
No accent then on Copley.
No. He's doing an American accent. And Anna Kendrick is Krasinski's.
What?
Anna Kendrick is Krasinski's girlfriend back in New York, who then also comes out to, where are they, Ohio. She's pregnant, of course, because the girlfriend's always pregnant. Which reminds us of the rule of Chekhov's uterus. If you introduce a pregnant woman in the first act, she has to give birth in the third act. Just remember. So the brother, the Charlton Copley character, is so weird. His name's Ron. He's stalking his ex-wife.
Oh.
Who's now with Josh Groban. That's all weird. Everything that's not about John Krasinski's character, whose name is John, easier for him to remember, I suppose. It's about all, of course, about him figuring out his life and what he wants to do and what he's going to do and, that always. And that's fine, whatever, generic. But everything, like with his brother, the stuff with his brother is weird and sort of unnecessary. There's some tangents with the dad, Richard Jenkins. They're having money problems. It just feels like a mishmash of random generic indie film cliches with the folk guitar soundtrack, all the songs, mm-hmm. A bunch of Hey Ho songs on the soundtrack, a bunch of those,
Yes.
And lines like, it's terrifying to find out this late in your life what you should have done. So it's the usual story of regrets in life and sort of melancholy. Mm. It's got some funny moments here and there, but it's just such a rudimentary, weightless movie that makes me think, have you people never seen a movie before? Like, what made you think that this was anything special?
James Strauss wrote it, and he's kind of hit and miss, but one of his hits, for me anyway, and I can't remember, did you eventually see this movie? People, Places, Things from just last year, 2015.
No, I never did see that.
That to me is easily, that's his standout.
Oh my gosh, and I see that he also wrote Lonesome Jim, which Steve Buscemi directed, played at Sundance 2005, which was also this exact movie of the guy going back to his hometown. I remember that year there were like five of them at Sundance, and Lonesome Jim was okay, but it was very formulaic, and now here he is back to the same formula. There's just nothing to it. Margo Martindale really is great. There's some nice moments with the family. It's sort of a semi-functional family, but there's moments of where we see how they bond, we see how they relate to each other in a way that feels warm and authentic. It's hard to go wrong with Richard Jenkins and Margo Martindale is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no matter how bad a movie is, if those two are the parents, how bad can it be? But there's really, really weird tonal shifts. The stuff with the brother At one point, the brother, he assumes that the Asian doctor must know martial arts, which is just like a weird, out of nowhere, because that's not in keeping with the character. The character isn't particularly an idiot or a racist or anything. It's just sort of a random tone-deaf kind of joke. And there's a few things like that where you're like, what are you doing here? What kind of tone are you going for? And then it tries to get some emotion, some pathos that it doesn't earn, that it gets there cheaply. And I don't like it. So ends up, it's sort of a mediocre movie. And then near the end takes a turn for the worse. And nope, I don't like it. And I give it a D plus.
Whoa.
Yep. No, sir. I got no patience for you, the Haulers. Also, the last name is the Haulers, you know, because they yell a lot. The Haulers.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Get it? The Haulers.
I get it.
Yeah. They're the Lockhorns. And now, finally, Snowden. Snowden. It's about Edward Snowden.
I kind of tried to see this one, but there was a daytime screen and it didn't work out.
Just
I was interested.
Didn't work. Yeah, yeah. Oliver Stone directed this, and it's kind of good material for him because he's paranoid and crazy, as you
he's,
know.
He's interested in the layers of life, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Like I said, paranoid and crazy. And this is about the guy who was a whistleblower who blew the whistle about the CIA spying on everybody, which is right up Oliver Stone's alley.
Yes.
Because Oliver Stone, I guarantee the day that that news story came out, Oliver Stone said, I knew it! Right?
Yes.
Completely confirmed everything he's thought for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's this movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Edward Snowden, and he's apparently doing an Ed Snowden impersonation.
Okay.
Doing something with the voice. In the trailer, it threw me off. In the movie, it's fine. In context, it's fine. If you just hear, like, one line of him doing the voice, it sounds ridiculous. But it's like this kind of deeper voice, just kind of talking like this.
Hmm.
It's a little bit like Beavis or Butthead. Which one talks like this? Hey, Beavis. Butthead. That's how Butthead talks.
Beavis. Yeah.
But he's fine. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Edward Snowden. And
wait, he's just fine? This is like him. This is his movie, right?
Or I know.
Is this more of an ensemble?
No, it's definitely all about him. And he's fine. He's good. He's good. JGL, he's good. It's not great. Nothing about this movie is great. Not one thing about this movie is great.
So you don't put it on his shoulders?
No.
That was a misfire.
Yeah,
no
he's fine. Okay. No, the performance is fine.
Okay.
And it's not that the movie is bad. It's strange how low energy it feels, especially for being an Oliver Stone movie. It's not edited all crazy-like. There's not crazy camera stuff. It's a pretty straightforward, boats movie with this story. He begins back in 2004 where he had been in the Army, a patriotic conservative guy in the Army, but then hurt his leg, couldn't be in the Army anymore, wound up working for the CIA as a analyst, like a private contractor, and then worked for them and worked for the NSA and whatever. And this is all happening as being intercut with scenes set in 2013 where he is blowing the whistle, where he's in Hong Kong at a hotel room meeting with journalists from The Guardian in the UK. That's Melissa Leo and Zachary Quinto meeting with them to tell the whole story. And so the whole movie is kind of flashbacks as he's laying it all out. And
is it tense?
No, there are a couple of moments. No, but there are a couple of moments where he is doing a little bit of skullduggery, a little bit of sneaking around or something.
All
right. You know, the standard, I got to copy these files before so-and-so walks back into the office, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm,
computer stuff. But only a couple moments. That it is not a tense movie, not meant to be a tense movie. And I'm not sure what kind of movie it is meant to be. Maybe it's meant just to outrage us. But I suppose if you already know all this, then what's left to be outraged about? I didn't know enough about this story. I knew the basics that the CIA had been doing these warrantless wiretaps under some sort of, they call their FISA warrants, which has to do with, I don't remember. Anyway, I knew that all happened. And I don't know that the movie told me any more about it than I already knew. But it's interesting. It is interesting to see how it all played out and see what the issues were. Well, like at first he has a girlfriend. A girlfriend is Shailene Woodley, and she's liberal. And they kind of joke about her converting him to be a liberal. And he gradually becomes more liberal as he gets more involved with the CIA and the NSA and kind of sees what they're up to. But he begins, one of his coworkers called him Snow White because he's this sort of pure, naive guy.
Okay.
who it is interesting to see the process of him becoming disillusioned, like to realize what it is that we're doing. And he's got his bosses telling him, no, we're just doing this and we're just within these parameters and this. And then he sees what's actually going on. Like, oh, no, we're spying on everyone. We're just recording everything that happens. And to see him be disillusioned by that is an interesting process. The whole thing covers the facts, but it's not like it's not like a rant or a screed. It's fairly restrained, actually, as movies go. And there's no real emotional connection to Snowden. We can feel for him and his girlfriend, and they have troubles because he can't tell her anything about his job, which is obviously a complication. And he moves several times, and they break up a couple of times. But the movie never really tries very hard to make that like a compelling emotional issue for us.
So it's just a little flat.
It's just a little flat. Nothing especially wrong with it. I don't think that it like tells the story wrongly. It just doesn't have any oomph to it.
Is it the main problem is not the running time?
No, it didn't feel over long.
Okay.
I wasn't bored with it, not turned off by it, not annoyed by it, just sort of, all right, oh, interesting. Okay, that was me the whole movie. So, you know, if you want one of those.
Can I, Nicolas Cage is in it?
Oh, yeah, Nicolas Cage is in it. Yeah, he's a CIA guy. Only has a couple of scenes, unfortunately.
Okay.
Just a couple of scenes as a guy who kind of shows Edward the ropes. Kind of a waste of a Nicolas Cage. Just a few scenes, and he's good, but he's not, you know, not enough to really sink his teeth into. Oh, and then at the end, Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Edward Snowden is doing some appearance, some event somewhere, like by satellite. He's hiding in Russia now, and he's speaking to an audience.
Yes.
And then they cut to the real Edward Snowden, like really doing that. And it's really weird. That's where I was like, oh, Oliver Stone, there's Oliver Stone being goofy, being weird again. It's jarring and strange.
Oh, and that's are you telling me the end of the movie?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
It ends with him hiding in Russia, where he still is to this day.
Yeah.
But yeah, then footage of the real Ed Snowden was just a very odd choice. Like, were you afraid we wouldn't believe this was a real guy? What are you trying to prove here, Oliver?
Is it one of the, like, is he showing Joseph Gordon-Levitt's chops? Like, wow, look how close they were. You almost didn't know it was, no?
Not like that. Yeah, I don't know. I gather Oliver Stone and Edward Snowden are buddies now. I assume they're pals. So there you go. You know, Snowden. C.
And now it's time for the question of the week.
It sure is.
We asked you people, in honor of Bridget Jones's bebe, what other movie from 2001 deserves a sequel?
There were a lot of movies in 2001, so you had a lot of things to choose from.
Some people would think there was only like 5-10 pictures way back when.
Yeah, no. Even that long ago, there were a lot of movies. Now, of course, we'd have to discount all the movies from that year that actually did have sequels, which is probably about 2/3 of them.
Probably is. I'd be curious to see. Like,
I'm just thinking, I know there was a Harry Potter that year, and there was Lord of the Rings. And,
oh, man.
Anyway. Here's what you guys suggested. What I learned from these answers, I learned that we have listeners who remember the movie Swordfish a lot better than I do.
Speaking of which, Russell says, my pick for a 2001 sequel is Swordfish.
Hey, that's what I was talking about.
All four leads, Travolta, Barry, Jackman, Cheadle, are still effective and popular actors. International terrorism and cybercrime are still both very relevant.
That's true.
Make the central character the daughter from the first film.
Here's where you lose me.
Yep. And then he says she's followed in her dad's footsteps, working for some sort of anonymous analog. She uncovers something super dangerous, cue the other actors to chase after, try to kill, save the day. In particular, I think it would be fun for Jackman to be way off the grid, Cheadle to be disgraced and regulated to nothing work by the FBI, and for Travolta and Barry to be on the outs with each other, half a dozen characters each with their own distinct agenda. I would watch I'm not allowed to say that word this week. Or can I say that word?
Yes, you can say crap.
Okay. I would watch the crap out of that movie is what Russell says. I'm not allowed to swear this week because I lost a bet to Eric. It's something to do with the summer box office challenge. You can look up in our annals. It's been recorded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Yeah.
Julia says, Swordfish was the last American movie about terrorists and exploding buildings to be released before 9/11. Sequel could explore how that event has changed Hollywood's ideas of destruction as entertainment.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, Swordfish, there we go. Are we done with our Swordfish section?
Here's what I remember about Swordfish, is that it was bad, not a good movie, and that also that Halle Berry showed her breasts, which was a big deal because it was the first thing she was been in after she had just won an Oscar or something.
I was going to, yeah, that's what I remember.
And
Travolta had, I think he had longer hair, like pulled back hair. I mean, it was a wig. It's always been a wig. But
sure, sure.
That in particular, but yeah.
He's always got a wig and a beard.
I did not know Cheadle was in the movie. And you like saying Jackman makes sense. It's like, oh yeah, I think he was in that movie.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there you go. And then Gar suggested Vanilla Sky. The sequel could be called Chocolate Earth. All right. Sure.
Every time I watch Vanilla Sky, and it's not very often, mm-hmm. but it's like, wait, do I remember what happened last time? Like, it does that to me.
I only ever saw it the once.
I bet I've seen it, I think throughout the years, maybe I've seen it like four times now. Sucked in on cable maybe once, something like that. But it's just, it's one of those, even like Memento, every time I watch it, there is at some moment I'm like, wait, I thought it was this way. Like there's like something, which is why that's such a great rewatch. Anyway,
right.
Porter says A Knight's Tale. There are several more tale stories from the book that could be told, and I'd like to see them all done with unabashed anachronism like Knight's Tale was.
Yeah. What book is this? Is this a book? Was Knight's Tale based on a book?
I was hoping you were going to be like, yeah, you didn't know?
Yeah, maybe. Oh, he means Chaucer's. There's a Knight's Tale in Canterbury Tales. That must be what he means. He means Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales.
Got it.
There you go. And tell some more of those tales. Although I don't know if maybe it was. I don't know if the Knight's Tale in A Knight's Tale was the same story as Chaucer's. Probably. Probably different music, though. I liked that movie, Knight's Tale. The movie was ridiculous, but I enjoyed it.
It was quite ridiculous.
And then Dallas says, in From Hell, Johnny Depp hunts for Jack the Ripper, notorious serial murderer. Somehow Depp's character is brought forward in time to investigate another series of horrible grisly murders. The victims? Johnny Depp's movie career. Oh, we've gone meta. Who's responsible? Is it creepy Tim Burton? Is it the ghost of Tonto? Could it be Depp himself? Find out in From Hell. Savage? Sauvage? What word are you spelling there? Sauvage. Salvage? Are you trying to say salvage? Is it like a British spelling of savage? Savage?
He can hear you, but he can't answer you right now. You need to stop.
All right, well, it's French for wild. Sauvage. All right, that makes sense. In this context, though, I don't know. All right.
This has gotten under your skin.
I don't know what any of that means.
Scott says, oh, Rat Race, of course. Now we have a whole new bunch of stars to choose from for the next race.
Well, that's true. And Rat Race was basically just a sort of a ripoff of
an ensemble.
Mad World.
You know, this is my theory for
just,
like...
Just do some more of those. Do that again with different people.
Do that again.
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood is going to do that again in just a few weeks, right? Next week? Magnificent Seven.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for example. You know what would be fun would be to take the same cast... And keep making those movies. Take your Ocean's 11 cast and have them do Mad World and then have them make Magnificent Seven or whatever. Like the same actors, I mean.
Wow.
Like a troupe of actors keep remaking movies.
Boom.
It's a fun idea.
It is a good idea. It's a good idea.
Thank you. And then Edward says, a sequel to Trouble Every Day, which he helpfully points out, is Claire Denis's art horror film about people who compulsively cannibalize who they have sex with. If I had a nickel. And Edward suggests maybe it could be an animated sequel about gingerbread people so that it appeals to a wider audience.
There's a twist.
That's true. That's a good point. Trouble Every Day, probably a very limited audience that would go for that kind of movie where people cannibalize whoever they have sex with. On the other hand, you see the benefits of that, though. Like, there's no, walk of shame. There's no, I got to call you later. There's no, like, running into the person at the grocery store or something. You see him at a party. You just eat whoever you have sex with. Done and done. It solves both problems. I was horny and hungry, and now I'm fine. Now I'm neither of those things. So there you go. Sequels from 2001. Now we're taking a break from question of the week.
Yeah, we're going to turn it into a question of the occasional time when a question should be asked.
Most immediately, because we're going to be at Fantastic Fest, and we always like to not have other things to think about when we're doing that. But then, yeah, we're gonna try some new things, come up with some new ideas, you know.
New ideas, same ideas, old ideas.
Yeah, want to retool ideas. Some things.
Yeah, we're gonna tinker.
We do want to tinker with the show a bit because we have lots of listeners. We have about 4,500 downloads per episode now.
Seems good.
Yeah, that's good enough, and it's more than it used to be. And we hope that the people who listen to the show enjoy it. We want them to continue enjoying it. We just would like for there to be more of them. So if there's things that we could do to make the show a little bit better, to attract more listeners, and to make people who listen feel more excited about, hey, I should tell my friends to listen to this show.
Word on the street is, Movie BS is quite good.
However it is, I don't know how people learn about new podcasts. I don't know how that comes up in conversation. But however that works, we would like for there to be more. So yeah, we're going to tinker with the show some. A little bit. So no question of the week, at least for the next couple weeks. And then we'll think of a really great question and come back with it. Probably.
Or I'll do my Mount Rushmore. Who knows? I love my Mount Rushmore.
I know you do. I'm well aware of your feelings on the Mount Rushmores. Now, this week that is now coming to a conclusion has been a very special week for you, Jeff. Do you want to tell the people why?
Dylan. No?
Don't care.
Huh.
Nope, not that. The other thing.
This is the week that I am a Mormon.
Having lost the summer box office challenge, he had to spend a week living the life of a Mormon. Mormon light.
Yeah.
There's certainly many more, and people have very helpfully on Twitter been giving us suggestions for what we should have done.
So much on Twitter this week.
About things that we could have had. The actual restrictions, the actual rules were for the whole week, no coffee, tea, alcohol, or tobacco. And how's that been going? No coffee. Coffee and beer would be your two main ones there.
I think coffee has been a more significant absence of my life. I had no idea how much time during the day I spend wondering where I'm going to get my next cup of coffee. I had no clue. Like, if I go to the OMSI with the kids, I have a certain amount of coffee at home, and then I know when I get there. Dylan and I have an actual honest-to-goodness routine when we walk into OMSI and I'm getting my coffee, or when we're walking into the Children's Museum and I'm getting my coffee, which is funny to think about, like, now.
It becomes part of your routine.
You wonder when you stop your coffee at the end of the day. When you know you have enough energy to get to the end of this life,
and it has come up that this seemed like a loophole that you could still drink Diet Coke or like pop a caffeine pill.
Yes, I was amazed, and people are also amazed.
The prohibition in the church is just coffee and tea, specifically coffee, tea, alcohol, and tobacco. And many Mormons culturally interpret it as being all caffeine in general. And I grew up in a no caffeine house. I grew up, we didn't drink caffeinated soda.
But then you got a hold of it.
Then when I was a teenager, I got a hold of some of that sweet, sweet Dr. Pepper. But like you go to a Mormon like social function, there won't be any caffeinated sodas. BYU campus doesn't sell caffeinated sodas. They sell only the caffeine-free versions.
Oh, my goodness.
Even though it is not an actual church like doctrine policy, but culturally it became ingrained. But a couple years ago, the church actually put a statement on their website clarifying, no, it is not against church doctrine to drink caffeinated sodas. They finally had to clarify. So yes, there's your loophole there. You've been able to survive. Can you imagine? Have you been like taking caffeine pills or whatever?
The first day I had, I think, 4 or 5 Diet Cokes.
Yeah.
And that was just too many for me.
And it's not enough caffeine because a cup of coffee has got like, I don't know how many cans of Diet Coke that is, but it's a lot.
Is it?
The same amount of caffeine. Yeah.
Oh, I thought they were similar.
They're not. Yeah.
So yeah, then I switched to I don't get them anymore, but I used to get migraines. And when I feel the hint of like the light migraine coming on, mm-hmm. I can take Excedrin migraine. And that has caffeine. And so that's how I've started with two pills in the morning, and that's all I've needed.
There you go.
I was truly the one thing I was concerned about was like the caffeine headache. I was
right.
Going through withdrawals, like sincerely, because I was up to like 50 or 60 ounces of coffee a day.
Yikes.
But it's going well.
Good.
Yeah. And every night I get to congratulate myself by having a beer, and that's great.
No,
not at all.
By the way, I've looked it up here. A 12-ounce can of Coke or cola, any cola, has 29 milligrams of caffeine. And a cup of coffee is anywhere from 100 to 200.
Oh, my goodness.
Depending on the strength of the coffee, yeah.
Right.
So, wow. you got to drink a lot of soda to compensate.
Yeah, I it is weird to realize that I could quit coffee.
Yeah?
I didn't think I could. I thought it was in me.
But think of the money you would save, money and time. I guess if you like coffee, I guess
you'd
be missing
the coffee smells and tastes.
I love the smell of coffee. I have never liked the taste of coffee.
Oh, you put a little cream in it. Just a little cream.
You know, it is the same with gasoline.
You don't like the taste of gasoline
I love the
now?
Smell, but the taste I don't care for.
Okay. Yeah.
Ever since I became a Mormon, I quit drinking gasoline. And then also, Jeff had to go to church on Sunday.
I did.
Which was fine. It happened without incident. Nothing.
That's right.
Nothing terribly crazy happened.
No, there was
it
nothing
ran,
at all.
It ran long, which is uncommon and very annoying when it runs long.
It felt long. I felt tired. But then again, that was the first morning I was without
right.
caffeine.
Right.
So it was twofold.
Think about it. Nobody in that room had any coffee.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
Did you hear me? I said, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Nice
Just
job.
Just saying. It's no big
nice
deal.
Job. That was the other thing. Yeah. No swearing this week.
Yeah. I've slipped up twice.
That you know of.
Right. Yeah, I probably swear in my sleep like crazy. That's when the devil's got me.
I would wonder if you just sometimes do and just like don't realize it.
I'm pretty hyper aware of it this week.
Okay, yeah, I guess when you're actually
trying
to pay attention.
I don't think
yeah.
I have
That's
slipped.
True.
This
That's
week.
True. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The church itself, I'd say there was a lot of similarities. I grew up pretty regular. Is that what you call it? Yeah. Presbyterian. So yeah, so,
I would imagine fairly yeah. similar.
Right.
Same
and now,
general
I mean,
idea.
I am happily agnostic, but it was an interesting experience to see.
Yeah, there you go.
They're a lovely people.
They're fine people, those Mormons.
When they're not chattering.
So, because what happened was, it was this week's sacrament meeting was a bit dry. The speakers were all a bit dry. And... not that it's, you know, usually like a barrel of laughs, but it's usually a little bit more, some speakers are more dynamic than others. And this week was a bit dry.
They try to work the crowd on occasion?
And it also ran long. And so, yes, as some people became a little disinterested, there was some chatter going on, which you say the Presbyterians do not do. No chit-chat.
No. Dead yeah. silent. Like, yeah. you would get shit. Like, your family would shush you if you talked.
Well, and don't think that I haven't shushed people in church.
You have.
I have. Not very often.
What's your ratio, movie to church ratio?
Oh, movies a lot more, yes. Because
like
I,
you're 5-1, 10-1?
Because I guess having grown up a Mormon, I guess I'm used to it. I don't mind a little bit of whispering in church. If it's someone like right behind me, like right in my ear, or if I can hear them across the room or whatever, that's ridiculous.
I just thought it was like the volume of whisper surprised me.
Oh, they,
I think that's what caught me the most.
Whispering
it wasn't
loudly?
Like... I felt so. It was like, oh, you're having a conversation. Like
I had, so people know why I didn't hear the same thing you did. I was up on. I had to play the organ. I was filling in on the organ, so I was up there by the organ, and Jeff was in the
you
congregation.
Such a braggart.
Well, this is. I'm just saying why I didn't hear the people talking that you heard.
I'm kind of famous in our church.
I was
church.
Just filling in. I was
I get,
just. You know,
I get up on stage sometimes. It's no big deal. No
I
big
just
deal.
Had. I had to play the organ. You know, with my hands and my feet, like you do the organ. And so, your Mormon week now is almost over. It'll be over Saturday night, midnight, I guess. Be the end of it.
And I'm debating. You know the worst part?
Hmm.
My wife is working an overnight shift.
Oh.
So, like, I got both kids. I'm putting them down. I got to wake up with them.
Yeah.
I'm still, like, there's part of me that's like, if I stay up till midnight, I can have a beer then.
But then you got to get up early. with the kids.
I've done that before.
I know. I would think you would enjoy the beer more if you wait till Sunday.
I know, but there's a new beer that I haven't tried.
And you're worried someone will spoil it for you?
No, it could be my favorite. I don't know. It might be. It's from one of my favorite breweries, and it's a certain kind of beer, and I'm really excited.
All right. All right.
If anybody likes beer, fresh hop is what I'm referring to. You'll know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
Anyway.
Sure.
Anyway.
So, yes, that's almost done. And then at Fantastic Fest next week, I'll give you a haircut. And that will be the end end of your punishment for this year's Summer Box Office Challenge.
It'll be over.
So that's the show, then. We've come to a conclusion. Here's what we talked about this week on the show. Blair Witch, I thought was okay. You liked it less.
Right. No, I actually thought it was okay.
I thought it was recommendable.
No.
All right. The Hollers, no. Not good. Bridget Jones's Baby, okay. Better than the Edge of Reason. Better than that second one, anyway. And Snowden, pretty disappointing. Not much to it. Not much life to it. That's it, then. We don't have a question of the week. So I don't have to say what it is, because there's not one.
Does that feel good, Eric?
Oh, it's just weird not to do that at the end of the show. I don't know what to do with myself now. All right. So for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day. And I'd like to see them all done with unabashed
anachronism.
Anachronism. You're correcting that for me. I can't say it.
Anachronism?
Oh, anachronism. 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 Anachronism.
There you go.
With unabashed anachronism, like Knight's Tale was. Did I not say it? We gotta stop.
Unabashed anachronism.
Anachronism. Anachronism.
Anachronism.
Can't say it. Anachronism. Anachronism?
Anachronism, yeah. Right. Anachronism, yeah.
All done with unabashed anachronism. Did I say it? Damn it.
That was pretty good. That was all right.
All right, I'll do it again.
Okay.
Anachronism. Woo!